It's Joe Partivilla. This is the Forbes Books Podcast. And Bruce Springsteen once said that Americans in the other 49 states know when the announcer says, and now in this corner from New Jersey, they better keep their hands up and their heads down, because when that bell rings, we're coming out swinging. And my guest this week embodies that spirit. Tony DeSilvestro went from selling candy on the Jersey Shore to founding over 30 companies and becoming an award-winning entrepreneur, a successful real estate investor, franchise owner, and an internationally renowned business and leadership expert. Tony, welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you, Joe?
I'm excellent. Thank you very much for asking. And so it's great to always talk to a Jersey guy done good, although you got out of the state. You got the hell out of the Garden State, right?
No doubt, like the rest of us. Everybody's moving out of that state now.
Yeah, no, but we're not going to get into that here. But I want to talk about your career. And one of the things that's fascinating about you is a lot of people always want to help entrepreneurs. There are books, there's podcasts about it. But one of the things that you focus on is scaling, which I think is one of the most forgotten things when it comes to any entrepreneur, unless you want to be, a one horse guy, a one stable guy. But if you ever want to scale up, you have to think about scaling. Why don't people think about that, you think?
You know, I think most entrepreneurs, you know, we go into business and we become technicians, right? We're technicians. We're great at something. So I think what happens is we start our business, we're great, but we never know how to work on our business instead of in it. And unfortunately, entrepreneurs, like I tell people all the time, like, there's a difference between a business owner and an entrepreneur. I really think there's only about 5% of entrepreneurs that are actually business owners, because the problem is, as technicians, you know, you just get in your business, you don't know any better. You're stuck in the weeds. So, but to become an entrepreneur, though, you have to learn how to scale. You've got to learn how to invest in your people. What does customer service mean? What does your brand stand for? And that's the piece that people don't work on, because we're so stuck in that business that we don't actually take the time to actually work on our brand.
It's so funny you say that, because you always hear about these billionaires, right? The Howard Schultz's of the world, the guy who runs Starbucks, and then he wants to become president, and it's a big flop. Because Howard Schultz did one thing well. He was amazing at selling coffee. That doesn't mean you could do anything else. It means that he does that one thing and no one cares what Howard Schultz has to say about the economy. And it goes back to what you're saying, is the fact that when you're an entrepreneur or a business owner, you're focused on that one little thing. You got your head in the sand. You don't think about the big picture kind of stuff. So how were you able to recognize that as an important thing to being successful?
Well, you know, like when they say serial entrepreneur, and a lot of people don't understand what that means, but to be an entrepreneur, you have to be able to fail really well. First, you take a risk, and a lot of people can take risks. Business owners take risks. They go in business. But how many people actually fail really well? So to be an entrepreneur and a serial entrepreneur, you take a risk. You get an idea and you're like, hell, I'm going to try that. And then you try it and then you fail. But you get back up and you say, what did I learn from that? And that's how you succeed going forward. The funny thing you say about Starbucks, though, is most people don't realize that company's like 46 years old. It took them 25 years before they actually started expanding and perfecting the brand. So as an entrepreneur, he was a great business owner for 25 years and then became an entrepreneur. Then he understood what it was to scale his business.
Interesting.
So that's the difference.
Why do you think people don't make that disconnect? Like, why do people think it's hand in hand?
I don't know. It's even like Steve Jobs said, like, people think I was an overnight success as a computer person. Same exact thing, 51 years in business. And they don't realize that, because most people are so stuck in their business. But to get outside of your business, you really need somebody to help you see that, right? Because, I mean, unless you have a mentor or a coach or somebody that's actually showing you the path, it's very hard to see it.
Mm. Who showed you the path?
You know, there's a crazy part about being a serial entrepreneur, and that's why I say there's very few entrepreneurs, because my past started from a young kid. I grew up in a small town in Jersey Shore, and it was 4 months of hurry and 8 months of worry. So when I was a kid, we only had 4 months to make our money. So as my father and my mother showed me, when you own a business, like, they were like, look, you have to make money every day. Flip over that dollar bill, and it says, in God we trust. So as a young kid, I learned what it was to make a dollar and not be afraid to go out there and put yourself out there. I was selling Mexican pottery at 10 years old and selling fruit at 12 and 13 on the back of a pickup truck to all the hotels. So at a very young age, I had a huge advantage of actually selling and what customer service meant. So when I went and started becoming an entrepreneur, I wasn't afraid. I've tried so many different things from the time I was 8 to the time I was 23 when I opened my first restaurant, that I had an advantage.
What's interesting is, Tony, is a lot of people always write about, if you're going to do something that you do really, really well, and then just like put all your eggs in one basket. You have a lot of baskets. Why do you feel like you've been able to be successful by spreading
your eggs over multiple baskets.
You know, a lot of people say that because most people aren't successful as entrepreneurs. But the one thing I realized at a very young age, I'm not in the restaurant business. I'm not in my construction business. I'm in the people business. And once you understand what it is people, then you can actually do different businesses at the same time. You know, it's like marriage, you know, like, I don't know, but marriage, it's like, you know, I love my wife. I've been married for 28 years. And every day is something new. But every day I look at my wife and I say, what is the process that I'm working with my wife? How are we doing that? I think about marketing a lot. If everybody invested time in marketing in their relationship, they'd be much more successful. But for me, it's people is everything. It's the essential. When I mentor and I coach businesses and I speak, I tell everybody in the room, I said, well, every one of us is in the same business. You just don't realize it yet. We're all in the people business. That's what we do.
Yeah. And there's that old joke from Family Guy, no matter what business in, you're always in sales. Like, you may not think you are, but you're always selling something, right?
Well, because we're dealing with human beings, right? So yeah. No matter what, the first day everybody opens their business, they need one common denominator. They need people to buy something or to sell something to. You know, they need those people. And I constantly remind entrepreneurs, don't forget the first day you open those doors, because you need to remember that 20 years from now, what that's like.
And you have had a lot of businesses. How many, not current, but a total, how many businesses have you had a piece of?
Well, I started two last week. So I have like 33 businesses that I've founded. I'm currently running about 20 right now. So about 20 LLCs that I'm actually functioning in right now. So for me, it's like weird. I'm like that strange person. I don't have to write anything down. Everything's in my brain. It's like a Rolodex in my brain.
Wow.
So I don't know. I've been blessed with a mind. I tell everybody I'm crazy. And my daughter likes to remind me. She said, Dad, stop saying you're crazy because you're blessed. And really, I've actually changed my narrative to tell people I'm just the blessed person. I really am.
That's amazing. And so 30-something businesses you have now, how do you compartmentalize it or decompartmentalize? Like, do they ever bleed into each other? How different or how similar are these businesses?
Well, it's kind of funny, Joe. You said, do they bleed? They're all the same exact business, Joe. I'm all in the people business. So when I start to look at businesses, I don't look at them as separate businesses. I look at it's a process, it's a procedure that we have to get through. Whether I'm building million-dollar homes or I'm building restaurant pizza or I'm on solar or I'm in wind turbines, I'm still doing the same exact thing every day. It's just a process. I'm building something every day. So it's selling and building.
And a lot of times you hear about these CEOs being subject matter experts. And do you feel like you need to be a subject matter expert in whatever business? I know, take the people aspect out of it, but the actual business itself. Do you feel like you need to be an expert in that field?
No, I surround myself with greatness, Joe, and that's what I do every day. So like I'm in the wind turbine business right now. I'm dealing with a company in England, and I'm becoming a distributor in the whole United States. So what I'm doing is, right, so these people know, I don't know wind turbines, but the one thing I do know is how do people need wind turbines? Mm-hmm. What's it going to do for the end user? And that's the piece that I'm always focused on. How is it affecting the customer at the end of the day?
I have to ask, so you get into wind turbines, do you get into these conversations with people who are in the field and you're like, I have no bloody idea what you're talking about? Like, is that like a common occurrence?
No, I don't ever think that way because I love to learn. I feel if there's another human being that's going to do something, I can do it. And that's how I live my life every day. Unless you can put your pants on some other different way than me, Joe, like spin on your head, throw your pants in the air and they land on you. I feel I can do it, whether it's electrical, plumbing, tiling, doesn't matter, wind turbines. You know, so the conversation just started with me. They're like, hey, we have these wind turbines. I'm like, well, I have some great uses for them. So I just start going through my contact list and people I know that could benefit from it. So it's no different than the construction business. Who can benefit from me building your house or remodeling your bathroom? Hey, would you like a wind turbine on your roof? Because I can do that.
Wow. You know? And it seems like you built your career on networking, old school networking.
Yeah.
Is that from mom and dad, or how did that develop?
So my dad was a police officer. He was a cop. He was a cop and then did construction and then was a milkman. So my dad had this big personality. And, you know, so as a kid, I was exposed to, I guess, my father's personality being so outgoing. I was never afraid to talk to people. So, and I think as an entrepreneur, I think that's what it does for me. I'm not afraid to get in that conversation. Somebody says something like, oh, what is that about? When I was a little kid, they called me Absorbing Junior. That was like my nickname. And because they're like, God, you ask so many questions. And I'm just very inquisitive to that point. But that's turned out in entrepreneurship. Hey, I'm inquisitive. Oh, I really, tell me more. So that's what it is.
What do you say to folks? Because you say you coach a lot of these entrepreneurs who don't have the, I know it sounds kind of cheesy, but the gift of the gab or personable or have big personalities. How do you coach them to network? Because you know, obviously now things are different with the internet and such, but you still, even with the internet, you still have to put yourself out there. It's that fear of rejection. So what do you say to folks who don't have that sort of God-given ability?
So what I say, like, is there's a lot of introverts that are business owners because, like I said, they're technicians. They're good at a task, but they don't like to be in front. So what I do is make sure they hire that person that can be in front. You have to have a brand ambassador no matter what you do. You know, we need to get to people, right? So how do we get to people? If you're an introvert and you want to be in the office and you want an architect and you love to draw, well, who's at your front desk? Who's your receptionist? Are you investing enough in that person that answers the phone every day? That's the key pieces. I mean, it's okay not to be that outgoing person, but you have to hire the right people.
And let's do the flip side of that. What if you have somebody who, say, wants to be the face of a company, but probably shouldn't be?
That's a harder question, Joe, right? Because then you have to really lay out the playbook for them and say, what's happening? You know, does this resonate with your customer? Do you know who your customer avatar is? Are you effective with that? Because the problem with a lot of entrepreneurs, they have these great ideas, but the problem is it doesn't resonate with the customer that they're actually going after. So you have to really redefine what the customer avatar, but then the employee avatar is something I teach a lot, is who are the employees or who is the owner? Does it resonate?
Right. And, you know, having this conversation, like Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy, comes to mind because prior to 2016, he was the brand. Like, you could not imagine talking about pillows without talking about this guy. And now, post 2016 and everything that's gone through without getting into it, it's all of a sudden like, is it good that he is the face of the brand as opposed to not, right?
There's no doubt. I think he just stays true to what he's doing because, you know, no matter what, you know, people, they're so short-sighted and, you know, they forget things so quick. And especially with the internet world today, I mean, you have a scandal and it's gone 2 weeks later. Yeah. You know, people forget about it. I think he just stays true to his brand, stays true to his message and just keep going. Mm. I don't really worry about that too much. I mean, it's so crazy today how quickly people forget.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that transition because I think you're probably a Gen Xer, right? I feel you're in that Gen X sweet spot.
I'm 53. Yeah,
so. You're a little older Gen Xer. So you've lived and run through companies through the beginning of the internet age. What are the main differences that you've had to maybe pivot or change because of the fact that now this thing called the internet exists?
The cool part about it is like I was before cell phones too. I mean, cell phones have been the most amazing thing in my life. I can't imagine not having a cell phone. I get so much work done. But the internet.
You sound like a kid, you know. No, I'm just kidding.
The cool part about the internet and marketing, what it's done is it keeps you on your edge with marketing, right? Because it's instant gratification. How do I, top of mind marketing is probably my key thing that I work on all the time. How am I getting you when you want it? When you want the product and service that I sell, how are you doing? But then also you can't hide with the internet. It's out there, right? So the cool part, it creates integrity in your brand because it makes you think about it every single day. Mm. And the second that you don't have integrity, you're done. In this environment, you're done.
Yeah. And it's funny because I worked on a TV show a few years ago and the executive producer, creator of the show was like probably a 60-year-old guy and he was obsessed with social media. And I was like, he would like produce the show based on whatever social media metrics we get back. And I was like, why are you so obsessed with this? He said, listen, I've seen a lot of dinosaurs in my business who have just faded away because they refuse to accept what's new and current and what's important right now. So if people are all on Twitter and they're telling me on Twitter what the show should be about, that's what I'm going to do. Do you feel like that's the problem with a lot of entrepreneurs where they're so set in their ways that they cannot see beyond their little offices or big offices, wherever they're right now? Is that a big part of their failures?
If you're not changing today, you're dying, right? Yeah. So in the military, they say the same thing. If you're not learning every day, you're done. You're not doing anything. So I'm a change advocate. I tell my wife all the time, if it's not changing, just dig a 6-foot hole because I'm jumping in. I have to be changing. If you're not adapting to your business, like I've changed my restaurant brand's name 4 times. I'm always knowing what that customer avatar is. I'm always looking at who is my customer. Does it make sense? So I'm always looking for that next great thing. And I have partners that are in my business that are young guys with me that can't stand change at all. And I'm that pusher. You need the fire in your company. And if you're not the fire, then you need to find who is the fire or hire that fire.
Oh, I bet your wife worries about, hey, hon, I have some change ideas. You're like, wait, what now? What is... Does she ever worry when she hates
when I start reading books. She's like, oh my God, he's reading books again. Like, because I'm always coming up with something new.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. One of the things I wanted to ask about all the businesses you have is, and you talked about failing well. Are there some failures that are not failing well that you're like, oh boy, that's a bad failure?
You know, for me, I don't look at failure. Like people ask me, tell me like 10 negative things that are happening in life and my tongue swells up like it's doing right now. I just don't think that way. So I don't ever look. A problem is an opportunity for me and always has been, right? So every time there's a problem, if you go into any one of my companies, I preach all the time, what is a problem? And everyone will tell you it's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I look at that. I've had some big failures in my life. I've lost two businesses, cost me $500,000 both times. And the thing is, though, I never looked at them. I failed the next day when I closed the business down. Finally, I got back up and said, what did I learn from that today? And how am I going to make tomorrow better?
Wow. And do people think you're psychotic when you embrace failure so much?
People don't know how to take me. You know, and that's why I think I call myself crazy, because I don't think people understand me, but I don't think I'm crazy in my mind. And people are like, oh my God, you're too busy. And I'm like, well, how do you know I'm too busy? Do you live in my shoes?
Yeah.
Because it's just the way I perform, and I need massive stimulation in my life. Mm-hmm. And so for me, looking for that, it just excites me every day to just keep moving.
And you talk about a wife, family, work-life balance. How does that even exist when you have 30 businesses?
Well, my wife's my partner in everything I do in life. We've been together 38 years, met at the Jersey Shore at 15 years old. But my three daughters, are all three of them are entrepreneurs. So my Sunday dinner table is very much entrepreneurship, or talking about how we're growing their businesses, how we're scaling their businesses. Yeah. It's really wild. I mean, I have three amazing daughters that just have grown up. They started working in the restaurant when they were 7 years old.
Wow.
And just that's all they know.
And what's it like seeing entrepreneurship through their eyes now that you've lived in it for almost 30 years?
God, it makes me really understand that, God, I wish I had a coach when I was young. Because if I had to say one of my biggest failures I had as a businessman was not to have a coach at a young age. I didn't know any better. I didn't have that. So today when I see young entrepreneurs, I'm like, you need a coach. You have to find just even somebody to sound off to. You don't have a board of directors. Who are you talking to about your decisions or what you're doing? Let somebody else be constructive. And I'm not saying a devil's advocate. I'm not saying somebody that's going to look at the negative side of everything.
Right.
But just run your ideas past somebody. But make sure they're an optimist. Make sure they're optimistic about life and what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, it's when you speak to business coaches, the adage they'll always bring up is, hey, Tom Brady has a coach. You know,
he does.
I'm sure you've used this. Michael Jordan had a coach, you know.
Right.
So the coaching is important. And you say you never had that. Did you ever have that person, though, later in your career that became that sort of coach, whether it was organic or where there was someone as a sounding board that you could bounce things off?
You know, so as I became older and longer in business, I didn't have a coach, but what I did is I went and looked for experts in those fields. Mm. So I kind of took an external coach and said, hey, I want to know about solar. And then I called like five people that were doing solar. I'm like, well, what do you know about solar?
Yeah.
And out of nowhere, you start to learn. And then obviously the internet has changed everything. I'm a YouTube junkie, right? So when it comes down to it, but you know, like for my daughters having a coach, though, I mean, they're just... it's just a benefit to them, you know. But it was kind of funny the other week. I was speaking at a conference, and my daughters asked if they could come to the conference. And I got done the conference, and my daughter's like, "Dad, I wrote four pages of notes." I'm like, "What do you mean?" And she's like, "I'm like, you live with me every day." She's like, "No, Dad, it's different. Like, I actually had to listen to you." So
ignore you at dinner, Dad. This is different. You're on stage.
It was really cool. It was a fun experience for me.
That's awesome. So with all these businesses that you have, do you feel that you're better at some than others, or is it like children? Like, do you treat them all equally?
I do. All three of my children are totally different. They're all, one's a CEO, one's an entrepreneur, one's just a creative entrepreneur, right? So, but I look at all of my businesses and I say, like, I have a clear focus on fundamentals of business, right? So how do you scale a business? So if you're focused on scaling a business, like franchising, right? So every franchise, there's 3,800 franchises in North America, and they all do the same exact thing. They scale.
Right.
They scale, they train, they know their brand, and that's how they're successful. So I don't have an issue with that, like knowing which one's different. I don't focus on that. I focus on the pure fundamentals of building a business and running people and moving. You know, that's where I'm at.
Are you still involved in restaurants?
Oh, yeah. I'm there probably 15 to 20 hours a week. You know, so but then my construction's huge for me, a lot of speaking, coaching, and teaching. So, you know, what the number 168 is, Joe?
No, what is it?
168 is how many hours are in a week. So if you take 50 hours, I have 117 hours a week to get my job done.
Wow.
So, you know, and I ask people all the time, what's 168? And they're like, I have
no idea.
Right. But I look at it, I sleep 50 hours a week. You know, I have a lot of time.
Oh, that's awesome. And so I want to get into the restaurant business in terms of the pandemic. What's that been like?
It's really cool. So, I mean, we're a full-scale delivery business already before the pandemic hit. So we just pivoted, and I hate that word pivot. Yeah. You know, we just changed our environment. We said, hey, what can we do? And I've been through so many recessions that, you know, you grab your staff and say, hey, times are going to get really tough, but what do we do to perfect this? How do we survive, right? How do we streamline every expense in our company? You know, what's the customer service? Hey, these customers don't have money right now, right? So how are we hiding in the value proposition of our brand? And so you just start to look at everything. And like I said, it's not different than any other company. In construction, we couldn't get 2x4s or 5 times the cost, 10 times the cost. So what do? We start knocking down the old, we're remodeling, we're taking 2x4s, knocking all the nails out, reusing all the wood. So you just adapt. And that's business though. I mean, because if you think you're going to go in business and it's going to be hunky-dory all the time, you're not thinking properly, because you always have to be able to adapt to every environment and change.
And sometimes you can't adapt with a lot of businesses running into supply chain issues. How has that been? I'm sure with construction, it was a disaster, but how did you deal with that?
It is. I mean, it's difficult, and there's certain things that are way out of your control, and there's nothing you can
do. If it's in a boat in China, there's not much Tony can
But it's communication, Joe, and then everything in business is communication, right? How are you communicating with that customer that's waiting on a door for 8 months, or a house that they're supposed to be in 6 months and it takes 12 months? You have to be straightforward with them, right to the point, and communicate with them. Mm.
And why do you think, I've raised the point a bunch of times, you've been involved in a lot of businesses. Why do you think the supply issue became such a bad thing? Why did it become the disaster it did?
There's a couple of things. I don't want to get too political or too in economics, but the thing is, though, like, you know, when we're running our country under 2% inflation, there's no way we can afford our debt, and there's no way we can run our country. So, you know, was it manipulated? You know, I don't really know, Joe. I don't want to get into that too far, but I have definite theories why we're having supply chain issues. I don't believe it's the ports. I live in one of the biggest ports on the East Coast, and we're functioning unbelievable right now. Mm. So, you know, is it politics? Is it California? I don't know what's going on. So, but it's definitely hurting the economy and raising prices. Even minimum wage, there was a huge discussion about minimum wage a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And now organically, we've raised the minimum wage without even the government being involved.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, why are things done or manipulated certain ways? I'm not sure, Joe. You know, we live in a big world, but it's very small at times.
Yeah, it's very true. All right. Well, we talk about stuff that's out of your control, and, you know, supply chains is obviously one of them. But talk to me about, in terms of entrepreneurs, when it's stuff that's beyond their control, whether it's an 08 recession, whether it's a natural disaster, weather related, some of that stuff, there's nothing you can do about it. No matter what kind of skill set you have, it is what it is. What do you tell the entrepreneur when it comes to stuff that's just out of their control?
No matter what, I think they may be out of your control, but when you go through recessions, and this is sometimes when you become the best entrepreneur of all time, if you can survive, and that's a key element of what you're saying, just sometimes you can't. Sometimes businesses do close, and they close all the time. But if you can survive a recession, or you can survive a natural disaster, wow, now you're doing something. So the three pillars of my brand and the pillars are very big for me. It's really defining your mission statement through three pillars. It's family, quality, and community. So all of a sudden the pandemic hits, right? So quality, I have nobody in my restaurants and I have all this staff. So what do? I fed over 100,000 people in my local community during COVID. So what I did was I took the community element of my pillar, one of the community pillars that I have, and I said, hey, what can we do? So I started feeding families at churches. Then I went to every nursing station. I went to every retirement community, all the police, fire, ambulatories. We went to all of them, and then that's what we did. So we just really focused on one of our key elements of our brand.
So what you're saying, when this happens to any kind of entrepreneur or CEO, it's like, just look within what you can do, and then push it out.
You know, right? Focus on your core customers and your core. What have you done over the years to build a great business, and focus on that. Focus on those people and see what can you do. Sometimes you have to get out of the box to be able to see it, you know, or out of the trees to see the forest.
Yeah.
And this is the part about being an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurs know how to do this because they are already outside of their business. If you're stuck in business, you're going to be like, woe is me, like Chicken Little, the sky's falling. You know what I'm saying? And unfortunately, that's not a great place to be. You really have to get outside your business.
And lastly, the entrepreneurial failure rate, I'm sure you know, it's not great. I think they have all sorts of stats, you know, within 2 years, 90%, within three. What do you think we can do, whether it's the entrepreneurs or people who help entrepreneurs, what can we do to cut that number down somehow?
they really need to, we really need to educate them more before they become entrepreneurs. You know, unfortunately right now in college, they're having all these kids. It's like the cliche thing. Oh my, be an entrepreneur. But the problem is they're going to see such a high failure rate in entrepreneurship because they're not actually educating them. I speak in colleges all the time and the professor's like, oh my gosh, it's so great to have you in here because it's real life stories. You can't teach entrepreneur necessarily in a textbook. It doesn't happen, right? So what I suggest is like before I opened my first restaurant, I worked in over 25 different restaurants before I opened mine. I worked for billionaires. And I worked for people who went bankrupt. I had to run to the bank. Whoever got to the bank first got their paycheck. But work in that industry, know what it is. When somebody says they want to own a restaurant, I say, go wash dishes for 6 months. Go learn the business. Go learn what it is to meet. I really think that probably one of the biggest things that people need to focus on if you want to be an entrepreneur is people skills. Mm. Because we need people. The only common thing in entrepreneurship is 98.6 degrees.
I love your numbers. You got all the numbers. And it's funny, when you say people skills, they don't call that anymore. Now it's called soft skills. I don't know if anyone's told you. You got to use the proper terminology, don't you? All right, I lied. I have one more thing about entrepreneurship. When we were kids, the word entrepreneur was a joke. Like when someone said someone was an entrepreneur, you'd be like, oh, so you're unemployed? Why do you think this word has reached different levels that it's almost become this magical thing? What? And you've seen it over your lifetime because I'm sure when you first said you were an entrepreneur, you're like, I guess Tony doesn't have a job or something. Right. So now entrepreneur, it's a cool thing. What happened?
Well, they thought I was in the mafia in Virginia because I had a vowel at the end of my name, but my family were all police officers. So, but the thing is, entrepreneurship really got hurt when Ford Motor Company, they needed assembly line workers. So they didn't want people to think outside of the box. So what's happening is the internet has changed everything, right? Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden you see these influencers and say, hey, look how much money is. And everybody's like, oh my God, it's so cool. I can make money easy. And that always scares me, right?
Yeah. So,
but the thing is, what's changed is the internet has changed. It's opened up a whole new world. And I think it's creating amazing entrepreneurs. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I think from when we were kids, I don't think it was cool to be an entrepreneur. They didn't want us to be entrepreneurs.
No.
They want us to work in factories. They didn't
work 9 to 5.
Exactly. Yeah. Work 9 to 5, put food on the table. And it was cool to do that. And it was great. You were a success if you could put food on the table for your kids. But today the kids they have a wider ocean than we did.
Mm. His name is Tony DiSilvestro. Can't wait to see what you're doing. You got a book in the works, right?
I do. I'm so excited. Just really putting my book out, just the like scaling your business and working on the three pillars of your brand. My book is a little more, it's not just a business book. I really go deep into my book. My book's all about how do the basic fundamentals of your business create you and give you the ability to scale.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to read it, Tony. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Awesome, Joe. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And that's it for this edition of the Forbes Books Podcast. If you enjoy the show, make sure you take a second to subscribe so you automatically get new shows when they drop. Also, if you have a minute, I would love if you left us a review so more amazing entrepreneurs like yourself can discover the show. And please, don't forget the golden rule and treat others as you want to be treated. Thanks for listening. Until next time, adios.
This has been a production of Forbes Books Radio. Find out more at ForbesBooksRadio.com.